Welcome to Back Fence Unhinged, a conversational full-body massage followed by in-and-out privileges to the sauna, only in storytelling form, to leisurely enjoy along with the middle of your day, afternoon, or night. You're about to hear an unhinged story about the importance of strong hips from the fifth strongest woman in the world, Gabby Dixon. Then comes the second unhinged part. We'll ask some questions about Gabby's story and perhaps share a story or two of our own based on what we hear. Who are we?
Well, I'm Frayn and you're Andrew.
I am.
Am I right?
Yes,
okay.
You
well,
are,
it's good to see
correct.
You again.
Nice to see you as well.
Yeah.
Are you a bench presser?
Am I a bench presser? Yeah, I have. And I really don't want to say how much in front of Gabby that I can bench press, but... my main thing is I have very strong legs.
Oh, you do? Okay.
Yeah. So, like,
what's your preferred weightlifting move then?
I love doing like deep squats.
Okay.
Deep squats with weights makes me feel good.
Yeah.
And I just notable is that I was one of the few 8-year-olds that could swim butterfly. Because of my leg strength, I could fly out of the water, and it was kind of awesome.
That's the hard one.
That is the hard
one. That's the hard stroke.
Yeah, it's what I swam swim team, breaststroke and butterfly. What about you, Andrew?
I, on occasion, will pick up a couple of 10-pound weights while I'm watching TV.
I don't feel bad anymore.
I walk a lot.
Yeah, as do I.
That sort of seems like I'm pretty good at Googling things.
Yes, good. Yeah. I started doing something called Japanese walking. Have you heard of this?
No.
Have you heard of Japanese walking?
Is it the one where you like flail your arms a lot and like make sure you do all the...
No. Well, I mean, maybe.
Okay.
That could be part of it. I feel like that could be part of it. It's where you walk leisurely for 3 minutes and then you walk as hard as you can and you do move your arms a lot for 3 minutes and you try to walk as fast as possible.
Okay.
And it's supposed to, it's supposed to be really good for your lungs and your cardiovascular.
Not that I run, but I hear that's the way you should run.
It's like interval training.
A form of interval training. It's a form of HIIT, if we want to use the acronym. By way of introduction, let's talk a little bit more about Gabby Dixon, who is, in fact, not only the fifth strongest woman in the world, but the 3-time fifth strongest woman in the world.
World's most consistent.
Yes.
Consistently 5. It's a good one. Multi-grip world record holder, nonprofit founder, strength coach, and model. That's a great, I love that menagerie of things that you are. She loves to inspire people of all colors, shapes, and sizes to try new things, be strong, and go for what they want in life.
That. Welcome to the podcast.
Yeah.
You have such a unique story. How did you get into becoming one of the strongest people in the world?
Oh, man. Okay. I have always been strong. I've always been an athlete. My parents were both athletes growing up. They met in college. So they were, dad was football, mom was volleyball. So they knew we were going to be athletic kids. I did track and field, had a scholarship, did a bunch of other sports too, but then souped my way into almost making it to the Olympic trials, missed the Olympic trials, went and played rugby for a couple of years, played abroad, discovered strongman, came back. This is a really short, hard, fast version.
Yeah, this is fast.
A lot of stuff happened in between, but yeah, I'm here now and I've always been really, really strong. That's been a big part of like my athletic journey. And when it came down to powerlifting and strongman, I was like, this is where I think I can thrive. And I've just been pushing it ever since. So much so to where now I'm the fifth strongest woman in the world for 3 years. And I found out that I did all that with really bad hip dysplasia that I had no idea about until about 2 years ago.
Oh my God.
Wow. That is wild. That's how strong you are that you didn't even discover it until recently. You're just like, I might have a thing, but my body is still strong.
We're fine. Everything's fine.
We're fine. Yeah. How did you, I'm curious, because you, when you were running through your things, how did you discover the world's strongest? How did you discover that whole contest?
So I was in New Zealand playing rugby. I was trying to go to do like international rugby. I was going to try to be in Team USA one day. So I was training there and a girlfriend of mine who was just going to the gym regularly, she's like, I just started going to a strongman gym And I love it. I was like, well, I'm coming with you next time. That sounds great.
I'm strong.
So
I'm
just signed up and just came with her to like what was a gym, but it was really just like a guy's like storage unit in his apartments. And
amazing.
He was my coach my first year, and he ended up coaching me for my very first competition. And I got fourth place at Auckland's Strongest Woman. And then I kept playing rugby because I was there in New Zealand for a year. So I kept playing rugby, had gone and played some like regional rugby, which is like your traveling rugby team in the South Island, and got this email saying, hey, since you got fourth place here, you're invited to New Zealand's Strongest Woman. And I was like, okay, I don't even live here. Like, she doesn't even go here. But I was there. And I said, you know what, why not? So I moved back to the North Island after my rugby season in the South Island. And they were like, all right, cool. We're just going to train you for like 6 to 8 weeks and see what happens. And I end up winning.
Oh, we're just going to train. I like that your life is like, I'm just going to train me for, I got an invite. They're going to train me for 6 to 8 weeks.
My coach was like, yeah, we're just going to go and train in my backyard and see what happens. And I ended up winning New Zealand's Strongest Woman at the beginning of 2020.
Amazing.
And then I got an invite to, because I won that, I got an invite to World's Strongest Woman in 2021. In 2020. Of course, it got canceled. So I had a whole year to train that. And then came in my first time, got fifth place. And then the second time, I got fifth place. Third time, I got fifth place. So.
Is there a lot of camaraderie? Like, are you friends with most of
the
top 10?
Yeah, the top 10. And it ebbs and flows because it's a international competition, and like sometimes people can't come for money reasons or family or whatever, so like it does say a lot that I have been that I was fifth place for 3 years in a row, because the mix-up was a little bit different each and every year.
Yeah,
so the first year people could have said, oh, you know, it's the first year back from COVID, nobody showed up, that's why she got fifth place. Cool. Next year, a bunch of people showed up, still got fifth place. Next year, even more cool people showed up, still got, so it's like I'm still top 10 no matter what. Top That's 5 really.
And you're relatively new to this, I would think.
Yeah, I started in 2019. That was when I was in my year in New Zealand, so that was kind of the kickoff of this specific sport. And I've been doing it ever since. I've kind of been in a hiatus for the last year and a half, but yeah.
And we're going to find out why shortly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
but one of those is the strongman contest. Is that the one where you have the chains and you're holding up the Grecian columns?
Yeah, that was a strongman contest. That's an event in a strongman contest.
Mm-hmm. All right, we're going to put that in the show notes. We're going to put the video to that because it's amazing. It's Gabby in a stadium on a platform holding onto two thick-ass chains that are attached to two Grecian columns leaning out mm-hmm. and holding them. And you also came up, the women came up pretty high, like above a lot of men, too, in this competition,
yeah.
I feel like.
Yeah, that one was really special because it was one of the first of its kind where it was mixed competition. So it was like Team USA versus Team UK. And we did this competition in Liverpool. So we had like a team captain, Martins Leishis. Hi, guy. He's my friend. we had a team competition. So it was us against them. And so the columns and everything were the same weight for the women and the men. And why that was such a, like a cool, special, viral moment was because I beat everybody there except for the current world record holding man.
Oh my God.
So I beat like 5 or 6 of the other world strongest men competitors at this like grip strength event.
Amazing.
Yeah. That's so cool. Is special. That is great.
Yeah.
Well, being strong is clearly a part of your career.
It is.
And then you find out about the aforementioned hip dysplasia.
Mm-hmm.
And so let's hear that. Let's hear the story tale of that.
Yeah, I had been really working hard up through like 2024, had one of the best seasons, but I did a bunch of travel back to back to back. And I came back from my third trip. I did like an Italy trip. I did a Swedish trip. Sweden trip.
The Swedish trip, though.
And I had gone to Liverpool all within like a month and a half to 2 months. And I was competing well, did a bunch of stuff, but my hips really started to hurt. And my lower back had been an issue for a year or two. I was like, okay, cool. Like, I'm just getting older, whatever. But I could only walk for a few minutes without needing to stop and like stretch my lower back.
Oh,
it was getting
wow.
really, really bad. So then after a bunch of these trips, my hips started feeling just like crunchy and really impeding my ability to walk and be mobile. I could still train. I could still squat and do things, but like walking to the next exercise was the most painful part of it. So I was like, okay, cool, need to figure this out. Started seeing a chiro didn't work. He's like, you need to get some imaging done. Found out that I had like severe osteoarthritis. I was like, wow, okay. people can play through that. People can figure out, like, no, no, you need a hip replacement. And I was like, no, no, I'm switching insurances. Goodbye. So mostly because the insurance I had was like, well, we don't think you should keep doing what you're doing. We're not going to help you rehab or get back to where you want to be.
That must have been a huge moment.
It was a huge moment. And I cried and I called a bunch of my friends who were in like the PT world and like, it's possible, maybe not for the best, but like, let's figure out something that's like at least going to get you on the right track to see where you want to be. So I switched insurances, went through that whole process. Found out along the lines of like getting a second opinion that I actually had hip dysplasia that was likely from birth. So like where people's hips are supposed to be like in like this nice little shelf right here, mine was like this and my hip was up here. So it was almost like in like a dislocated space. So they don't say severe because severe means dislocated, but it was severe. Like it was really, really bad. And it was in both hips.
And it had been for most of your life?
Had been. I didn't, had no idea. And I think it just been expedited because like I said, I did volleyball, basketball, track and field, heavy lifting, like running, all these things. I've been an elite athlete long before I even started playing rugby. I was like a 2-time national champion, 2-time state champion in discus. So like I've been doing stuff for a while.
And were they amazed because you have the severe congenital thing that you had been just like, I've just been doing all these things.
Well, like, it was wild too, because I didn't even know that I had the dysplasia part until like halfway through this journey. And the doctor's like, oh yeah, you're dysplasia. Like, excuse me, dysplasia. And he's like, well, yeah. And I was like, oh, that actually makes me feel better, because here I was thinking I just like ground my hips to shit because I am a big lady doing all these things and I think it's my fault. Meanwhile,
holding Grecian columns.
Right, right. I'm thinking like, oh man, maybe I am just who they say I am. Like I'm not fit to do this kind of stuff. But then he's like, no, you have dysplasia. And I was like, that makes so much sense because there's so many things I've done. And positions I'm supposed to hit and ways I'm supposed to be able to use my body that I've always been like, I don't understand. It has not computed, like overhead pressing. I was like, they're like, oh yeah, use your legs more. I'm like, I'm doing my best. Turns out my legs weren't getting half the engagement they were supposed to be getting because my hips weren't in the right places the whole time. So I'm now really excited to see what happens with properly placed hips right in the right spot.
Right.
Wow. Yeah. What was the process of getting this fixed like?
It was rough because I have a BMI that was greater than what they're used to working with. There was a lot of red tape I had to cut through. I actually had to go and like basically phone a friend and find somebody who was in like the hip world. My Dr. Tony Rockland, hi guy, another one of my really good friends. He's not actually my PT, but he is the guy who got me in with my surgeon because he knew all the surgeons in the area, and he's like, I will advocate for you. Like, you have to show me you're gonna do your work and do your stuff, but like I'll do my best to advocate for the surgeon to do the surgery with you, because they have complications when they're bigger body people, which I think is a load of crap, but they say that there's a lot more complications with plus size people, just making all the assumptions and using BMI, which is completely archaic. So it was really, really tough to kind of get that really mentally in my brain of like, this is going to happen, because to get to the BMI, I would have had to lose like 75 pounds, but I can't freaking walk. Like, I don't know how you want me to lose weight when I can't actually move. And I love moving. Like, look at my criteria. Look at my resume. Like, I like to be active. Like, that's my preference. But you're sitting here telling me I need to lose 50, 60, 75 pounds to meet this thing. But because I was working with this other person, he advocated for me with my surgeon. My surgeon agreed to do the surgeries, and I was able to get both of them done one after the other. So I'd had one December 3rd, and then I got my second one almost 3 months later to the date, March 4th.
Right.
It's one thing to hear that you have to have surgery, but then it's another to also hear that you have to be the one to advocate to actually get it.
Yeah, it was a crazy experience. I would not recommend it to anybody. I wouldn't wish the pain, first of all, on my worst enemy, honestly. And then I wouldn't wish that process of having to figure things out on anybody either, especially people who are already doing everything you can with the body that you were given.
Right. Yeah. And so your first surgery went well. Can you take us through, like, went pretty well, right? And it pretty smooth?
Yeah.
You want to take us through that second surgery?
So the first surgery was fantastic. I walked through it. I came out. It was almost like ethereal. I was like, oh, I'm feeling so much better. The nurses were great. They walked me to my car. They made sure I knew how to get in, everything. I stayed overnight because it was my first surgery. So I was like, let me just make sure things are good. So I stayed overnight and they were super nice, very attentive. The only thing that was weird about the first surgery was like, since I'm so strong and have such a strong lower back, they give you like the epidural thing. It took them 34 minutes to get a hole, like to find the spot to put it in my back to make the thing happens. So
I think it's so specific. 34 minutes.
I looked at the notes.
Look at the watch.
Can we get this going? I was like, what the heck? But it took forever for them to get that needle in my back. And I was sore for almost 2 months in just in the entry site of the needle because they poked me like 7 or 8 times.
Wow. Oh.
So that was like the one.
For our needle weary people. sorry.
Trigger
right
warning.
No thanks, the epidural this time.
It was terrible. And then I was lopsided. So then I was so much taller on my left side because all the arthritis in there was so bad. It like gave me like an inch. Like it gave me an inch of height on my left side. So I was like walking around feeling great, but my right was hurting so bad. And then it was like stamping on it. So it was like really hard to walk around for that 3 months in between.
Because it was the first surgery on one side and then the second surgery on the other.
They made me wait about 2.5-3 months before I was even able to, a month and a half to be able to sign up for it. And they're like, okay, you're doing pretty good. We can sign you up for the second one. So I'm thinking, cool. Second one's going to be just the same. It's such a short turnaround, 3 months. Going to be the same surgeon, same location.
Hopefully 33 minutes this time, or 32 maybe.
Something, you know. And I'm like, okay, I'm mentally prepared for them to take a while at that and whatever. So I'm thinking, like the first one, I woke up, didn't feel any pain, was able to go straight to my room, saw my visitors, got my flowers. It was so nice. This one, I woke up in excruciating pain, like someone had cut me open.
Oh, geez.
Weirdly enough, because that's what had happened.
Right. But
I felt it, and I woke up next to a man named Jorge. He was just standing there, and I'm like, hey, hi. He's like, oh, hi, I'm Jorge. I'm going to be your nurse helper right now. Like, I was like, yeah, I need some pain meds like yesterday. Like, this is bad. It's really, really
bad. I'm strong, but I need pain meds.
Yeah, something is wrong. And he's like, okay. And like, I remember waking up and it was like bright lights. They were doing the x-rays. I was like, I don't remember being conscious for any of this like rigmarole. So Jorge's like, oh yeah, cool. I got you. So he's chit-chatting like he should, distracting me from my pain. We're talking, whatever. And I'm like, so what are you giving me? He's like, fentanyl. And I said, oh, fentanyl.
Oh, that stopped you in your tracks.
I was like, all right, whatever. So we keep chit-chatting, trying to distract myself, and I'm feeling pretty good. I'm like, okay, I get it. Fentanyl's not so bad. So I'm talking to Jorge. We're getting to know each other. I'm asking him all these questions. I said, oh man, Jorge, I'm so sorry. I'm just yapping your ear off. I feel really good, nice and high now. If you need to, like, if you don't want to talk to me or like have me get your life story out of you, like, I'm a social worker, I'm a yapper, feel free to like not like engage or just like leave the room. Meanwhile, the room is like those curtains, so it's not really a room, it's just like a corner of an area. And Jorge's like, well yeah, you have to stay in here because your room's not ready, but I'll just like be here if you need me. I said, okay, cool. So I'm get distracted for a second, you know, high as hell, and I look over and Jorge's leaving the room. He's leaving the curtain. I said, I was just saying that to be in my head. I'm like, I was just saying that to be nice. I didn't actually want you to leave. Like, I don't have a phone. I don't have any kind of entertainment. I'm sitting there and Jorge's now gone right outside the curtain. But Jorge's now gone. I'm like, crap, I really have to pee.
Oh, no.
And the first time I was in surgery, like it was like a butterfly coming out of its cocoon. Like, I got up and they helped me go to the toilet and figure out how to use, and you have to keep your legs straight. So all these things they teach you how to do, and you feel so empowered because you stand up on your new joint for the first time, and it's this great thing. And I said, okay, yeah, Jorge, like, I'm sorry.
Your first time standing on your non-displayed
joint. Yes,
it
was beautiful. And my mom was there. It was just like lovely. But now I'm like, well, crap, I have to pee. And I call Jorge back. I say, hey, I'm so sorry, Jorge, I need to use the restroom. He's like, okay, cool.
How do you call him back, button, or do you yell?
I would just, Jorge. It's a curtain. Like, I don't
know. In a polite voice, yeah.
Yeah, just, you can basically billow the curtain out with his name to get him to go back.
So, Jorge, I need to use the restroom. He's like, he comes in. He's like, okay. And I was like, I'll just get up. I'm excited. He's like, oh no, I can't let you get up. I said, excuse me? Like, oh no, you have to, I have to give you a bedpan. Like, you just had hard drugs.
Is this your first bedpan experience?
This is my first bedpan experience.
Oh, baby's first bedpan.
It was baby's first bed. I was tripping. I said, do I have any choice in this? He said, I'm so sorry, no. And he has, at this point, done the thing. I didn't know they could do this, but he used like a little ultrasound thing and he saw how full my bladder was.
Oh.
I couldn't even lie and say that I didn't have to pee or anything. He knew I had to pee and he wasn't going to let me not pee. So I'm like, okay. And in my head, I'm like, okay, this is a nurse. This is his job. This is what he does. So Jorge brings in this little bowl. And I was like, okay.
Well, not a pan.
Not a pan. It
but
was
a
like
bowl.
A bowl, like a little bowl. And I'm like, I'm not going to tell him how to do his job. I've never had a bedpan before. But in the back of my mind, I'm like, I'm not sure that's going to be big enough. But he saw inside me. He saw my bladder.
He made a calculation.
He knew it was full. He brought this bowl. I said, all right. He said, okay, I'll just be right outside if you need me. He tips me over, puts this thing under my bum. I'm like, okay, cool. He goes out. And I'm like, okay, I just have to do this. I'm here now.
Let it go.
Nothing I can do. So I just let it go. And I keep going and going, and I'm like, yep, I think we're full, and it's overflowing. Sick. So my bedpan
was overflowing.
It was overflowing. I, again, never in my life have had this experience, so I don't know how to tell when it's done. I don't know. I'm trusting Jorge that this is a good calculation.
Also kind of a moment of being impressed by your bladder.
Yeah, I was like, I thought, and then I'm often wrong, but this time I was right, and I don't know. I don't know if I wanted to be right, though, because then I'm in this.
Yeah, and maybe you never want to eat the whole bowl again because of this experience.
No, I'm going to want a bigger I'm going to ask for a bigger bedpan. I don't know if they have bigger bedpans. No idea. Hopefully, I won't have to do this again, but
let's hope not. I hope for your sake, no.
So again, Jorge, I'm done. He comes in. I said, and I think it overflowed. He said, oh, okay. And I'm looking at his face to see if there's any judgment there. There's no judgment. Again, this is Jorge's job. I'm reminding myself this is Jorge's job. And I was like, I'm so sorry. He's like, no worries. I just have to call in the assistant. The assistant comes in. They tip me over, change my sheets. It's like one of those pit crews. Like, they literally have a system for when this happens. So I'm like, why don't you get bigger bedpans if this is the thing that happens? You have a system for it.
So
this is the problem.
They have to roll you from side to side. They have to do some kind of thing, right, to change the sheets. Because you're immobile.
Something. Yeah, they both, with one on my shoulder and one on my hip, and they literally just tipped me to the side, got the bedpan out, flushed everything out, and I was on clean sheets. So I was like, okay, cool. So I had to be back there for 2 hours. It was a long time. Before, I was just rolled in so beautiful. This time it was 2 hours. I was bored. No one was around. I just had to wait for people to show up. And it was fine. So I didn't go to the bathroom. I'm in the room. The stay was okay. I knew a bunch of the nurses. They were super nice and sweet still. But as we were leaving, I had I was well prepared. I had my backpack, my change of clothes. My mom had come to help me get everything out. They had parked the wheelchair outside of my room this time because they knew I was getting ready to leave. And I was kind of just waiting to see if the nurse was going to come back around to check me out or say goodbye or wheel me down. Last time, none of this happened. Me and mama were like, okay, I guess we're just going to start packing up. And so we start packing up, and I have a couple handfuls of things, and I'm still expecting them to come and show me how to get into my car because that's what they did last time. They did not do any such thing. In fact, when I asked for a little bit of help going down to the elevator, they're like, oh, no, your mom's here. She can help you carry your backpack. You can just, she actually said, you can hold your backpack on your lap and your mom can carry these bags. Bye.
And you're like, my mom's a college athlete. She doesn't know how to use.
Okay, because again, they literally wheeled me down last time, made sure they showed me everything.
I thought that that's what they were supposed to do.
I thought that's what they were supposed to do. So I was like, okay, they just said, see ya, kicked you out. And I was like, all right, I still feel great. I'm now 6 weeks post-op. I feel great. My hips are awesome. They've evened out, so I'm not wonky anymore.
Amazing.
Both the incisions are healing up great. I'm allowed to go in the pool again. Awesome. And it was, they didn't take as long to poke me this time, so I'm not sore, which is great. So all that crazy stuff happened, but at least my back's not sore 2 months later.
That's amazing.
Love it.
Happy.
So are you
going to
compete again?
I hope so. I have given myself a full calendar year to really get into it. I'm learning things about my body now, not having dysplasia, that I can engage certain things. I'm able to, I learned how to brace my deep core muscles recently, which I've apparently never done intentionally. Also, my legs are feeling a lot more engaged, which is dope. So I'm excited to see what happens, but I promised my surgeon that I would take it very, very slow.
Yeah.
So I'm going to take it very, very slow. I want everything else to keep up with my brand new joints. So I want to do some stuff for my knees and my ankles and just get everything nice and lubricated and happy. And then we'll see this time next year what's popping.
Yeah.
There's some new joints in town.
Exactly.
That's what's going on.
I think 0.16% titanium now. So
wow,
that's
out here. So awesome. Have you ever been injured, Andrew?
I have. Your story was reminding me. I had really bad vertigo, to the point where
I remember this.
I it was almost like a an old computer shutting off and taking time to I literally just wasn't able to move, and my wife had to call an ambulance, and they almost came and thought I was joking, but I was literally unable to move and just spinning.
The ambulance thought you were joking. This is hilarious.
Yeah, they were like, just get up. I'm like, I can't. And so
I'm working on a new bit, so I called you guys.
Twice I was hospitalized for this, and it was really like 3 days before I could even use a walker to get to the bathroom. It was really like having to learn and like, you know.
Yeah.
And but similarly, totally different hospital experiences. Like one was so good, one was so bad.
Yeah. You think it's going to be the same. Like, yeah. Especially when it's such a similar procedure happens.
It's two of the same, they're the same joint.
Same joint, same doctors, same location.
Yeah. What's going on? Yeah.
Hey, it is time for Bree's Hot Minute, brought to you by Powell's Bookstore Manager Bree Hogue. Bree's been listening intently as she's been pumping iron, alternating with some light hip stretches.
She sure has.
She's got some tasty book recommendations based on Gabby's story.
My first pick is Carrie Soto Is Back by Taylor Jenkins Reid. A 37-year-old retired tennis player decides to make a comeback, but doing so means relying on men who have done her wrong in the past, including her father, who is also her coach. I love books about women in sports, and this one is great, and it was a really fast read. As an aside, I see people refer to this book as historical fiction, but it's set in the 90s. Come on now. For my next pick, I want to recommend something with a happy ending. In Get a Life, Chloe Brown by Talia Hibbert, the main character is often in pain and confined to her house. She has fibromyalgia and she decides she wants to, well, get a life. She makes a list of things to do, like go camping and ride a motorcycle, and then enlists a brooding handyman slash artist to help her finish the list. It's such a sweet romantic story and a little spicy. That's it for my Hot Minute. Back to Frayne and Andrew.
Thank you, Bree. Awesome. Where can we find out more about you, Gabby? We're online. We're on the online world. In the online world.
I am one of those influencer creator people, so you can follow me online at GabbyGirl_ProStrongWoman. You can also get involved with my work. I have a nonprofit called Gym Space Equity to bring more diversity into gym spaces. So you can follow us on Instagram, sign up for our newsletter, that kind of stuff, too.
Great, awesome. Great. Yeah. And before we get to our final question to ask you about your petty unhinged experience, we would like to thank our listeners for listening to the show. We really appreciate you. Obviously, this one's for you. They all are for you. And if you subscribe and rate us and do all those things, it helps us to grow. And we have been growing. And we really appreciate your listenership. And with that,
what is something, Gabby, that maybe doesn't bother other people but makes you unhinged?
There, when Frayne was asking me about this, I immediately knew what I was going to talk about. I despise when people, like, I know someone has just been in the bathroom or even in the kitchen and, like, washed their hands, but they're still a little damp, and then they want to touch me. If you touch me with your just washed wet hands, yeah, I will become unglued.
Yes.
I cannot be responsible. I tell all of my lovers, I tell all of my friends, do not do this to me, or you will see a side of me you never want to. You'll see Patricia. That's my middle name. You'll see her.
Oh,
you'll
Patricia.
Meet her. It will be bad.
We can't have that. Patricia does not like the clammy hands.
Patricia hates the clammy
hands. You know why? I agree with you, because even if somebody says I just wash my hands, I'm like, I don't know what other sauces are mixed in.
Yeah. I don't know right? if you use soap. I don't know if you sang happy birthday three times. I don't know if you air dried, if you use one of those gross air dryers. I can't do it.
Yeah,
I really can't.
I don't want it either. And if you rubbed them on your pants, you probably rubbed them on your pants before, you know, uh-huh, at a different time when your hands uh-huh were dirty or you uh-huh sneezed on them. So,
or if they flick the water at me.
Flick it. Oh. Oh my God.
Julie, I'm
sorry. Julie noted.
You know, people do this so casually. Oh yeah, I wash my hand. Nothing worse.
I got you.
Can't.
I hear you on that.
Well, thank you, Gabby, so much for coming on the podcast today.
Yes.
This has been so
thank
much
you guys
fun.
For having me. This has been
and
awesome.
Thank you, Frayne.
Thank you, Andrew.
And thank you to our fabulous behind-the-scenes editor and producer, Julia Oppenheimer. Frayne Masters is executive producer. Frayne Masters and myself are co-hosts and co-creators. Thank you to musician and frontman for Lost Lander, Matt Sheehy, for creating our theme music. And thank you to Powell's Books and Kiln Coworking Space for making this episode and our live shows possible. We recorded this show at X-Ray FM. Find them online or 91.1 or 107.1. And you can find out more about myself, Frayne, and Backfence Storytelling shows and workshops at backfencestorytelling.com. And thank you for listening.
Bye.
Bye.